Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment. Mr. Commissioner Robert Mayer presiding.
Please be seated. There's one case to be argued this morning. The appellant has waived argument, so we'll hear argument from the appellee. There's also counsel here from the taxpayer in the case. Do you want to both argue today?
Your Honor, our intention would be to split the time, and we would anticipate perhaps answering questions from Your Honor about the case, because as you've noted, the appellant isn't here to present argument.
Okay.
We would like to proceed with a short introduction by myself, representing the commissioner.
Well, why don't we begin with you, Mr. Hubbard?
Thank you, Your Honor. As you noted, there are two appellees in this case, the tax commissioner of Ohio and the taxpayer in this personal property tax case, Waste Management of Ohio, Inc., represented by co-counsel Raymond Anderson of the Voorhees firm. I would anticipate that Your Honor may have some questions for us, but I would like to just set forth the basic issue in the case and how we see it. This is, of course, a motion to dismiss matter where the Board of Tax Appeals granted the commissioner's motion to dismiss on the basis that the appellant's notice of appeal to the board did not specify any error in the commissioner's final determination. The appellant here, of course, being the Greene County Auditor, Luana Delaney. The Board of Tax Appeals relied on a long body, uniform line of case law from this court, holding that the specification of error requirement is a mandatory jurisdictional requirement that must be met in order to confer jurisdiction upon the Board of Tax Appeals to consider an appeal. The actual language that Ms. Delaney employed in notice of appeal stated that the commissioner's refunders were unreasonable or unwarranted, and she also added that the taxpayer was out of business and was non-existent. She later attempted to eliminate that second part of it, that the taxpayer wasn't in business, through filing an amended notice of appeal after the statutory period for doing so at the Board of Tax Appeals. So the bottom line is that the Board of Tax
Appeals... Let me ask you a question. In your reading of the notice, moving our focus from the notice of appeal to the BTA to the notice of appeal to this court and to the auditor's brief in this court, is the issue the purely statutory issue of whether or not error was specified, is that before the court, or is it only some constitutional issues that are before the court?
I think that's probably a fair question to ask. I think in the briefing she would suggest in her initial brief that she's offering as an excuse that the reason she didn't specify error more specifically, at least, is that she had no access to information and she didn't have input in the commissioner's administrative proceedings. I think it's a fair question when you look at her reply brief, because she seems to concede pretty much that she didn't specify error and that she's asking for some relief that's hinged on a constitutional right. So,
well, would it be your position, though? I mean, are you willing to take a position that the purely statutory issue is before the court or is not before the court? Or,
well, I would say that her initial briefing and probably her notice of appeal to the court, I read it to mean that, you know, she retained that argument, but I think in light of the fact that she filed a reply brief that was fairly much non-responsive to that point, there are a few ways the court could go on that. They could say that she's waived it, even if she did specify, she's essentially conceded it by not arguing it. Certainly, she offers nothing in her brief to support the notion that she did specify error. I guess in some ways, it's so obvious that she didn't specify error that whether she concedes it.
Let me ask you about what you said about the second part. The first part of the notice of appeal now to the BTA was refunds are unreasonable and unwarranted, which sounds pretty general. And then this notion of the business is closed and non-existent. Does that in some way resonate? And I wish that counsel for the auditor were here for me to ask them this question, but does that in some way connect to some issue in this case?
Well, Your Honor, it doesn't in terms of being a basis upon which to overturn the final determination of the commissioner. And so in that sense, there's a disconnect. She actually, this particular auditor attends auditor conferences, and we can speculate as to what she meant. And I think it's actually more than speculation. The personal property tax administrator, John Nolfi, informed me that at a County Auditor Association meeting, Ms. Delaney, the Greene County Auditor, informed everyone that she believed that after the Ohio personal property tax was repealed, effective for the 2009 tax year, she was at a County Auditor meeting, and she said that she believed that because the tax had been repealed, it would be illegal for her to grant any refunds. And she said that in an open public meeting in the County Auditors Association. She was informed by the other auditors there, and their 88 auditors, many of whom attended, that that was wrong, and Mr. Nolfi, the personal property administrator, informed her that that was an incorrect position. And then after the meeting, she went up to John Nolfi and said, I don't care what everybody else says. I know that it's illegal.
How does that connect to this idea of the business being closed and not?
Well, I think from her perspective, it wasn't about the fact that the commissioner issued an assessment that set a certain value. It was the fact that as a result of that assessment, she would have to issue a refund. And she's saying, there's no one here to refund it to. They've left the town. So that, you know, that's another justification for her not having to issue a refund check.
But then, and you said earlier, though, that she withdrew that part of the, or attempted to.
Yes.
A second notice of appeal?
Yeah, if you look at, and I just happened to discover this when I looked at her memorandum contra, our motion to dismiss, she attached a few days later, if you look at the record of this case, you'll see that she filed a document purporting to be an amended notice of appeal that eliminated that statement. So it looks like she has recanted it. And of course, we know that Waste Management of Ohio, Inc. is not non-existent, as she herself acknowledged by serving Waste Management of Ohio the notice of appeal to the court. So there's a certain inconsistency with a lot of stuff that was done in this case. And I think it's hard to understand what the logic is, and of course she's not here to explain it to us.
What is the participation and role of the auditor in these personal property tax assessments and reassessment proceedings? Do they usually play a role in them or not?
Yes, usually I'm not sure about, but certainly there are many instances where the auditors do get involved. In fact, as we pointed out in our brief, the definition of assessor in the General Personal Property Tax Law in Section 5711.01 includes the county auditors as deputy tax commissioners. And in Chapter 5711, there are a number of provisions that refer specifically to the role of county auditors in that process. For example, they're to investigate claims for deduction from book value. That's set forth in 5711.18. And as a practical matter, as we pointed out in our briefs, to effectuate that subordinate agent role that the county auditors serve as deputy tax commissioners, the commissioner is authorized to provide information and documentation concerning the taxable value of all taxable property in the county auditor's county. So it's a routine matter that county auditors and their deputies themselves, the personnel from the county auditor's office, contact the tax commissioner's personnel and work with them. And oftentimes they'll point out issues. One thing that often comes up is within a county, property is miscited to a particular taxing district versus one versus another. That's a very common problem, and oftentimes it's the county auditors who alert the commissioner to that issue. And so what the commissioner's agents do upon audit is they switch the taxing, the property to the proper taxing district, because the taxpayer initially files the return, lists the property by taxing district, and sometimes they make mistakes. They have it in the wrong taxing district. That's a very common situation, and of course it extends to the actual valuation issues and exemption issues.
Now, you said that the statutes authorize the commissioner to provide information. Do the statutes require the commissioner to, or just
no,
discretionary?
It's actually because the hat that the county auditor wears in proceedings on audits and on administrative review of audits when it's still in the tax insurance shop is one that's a subordinate role. It would be like, the way I think of it, maybe prosaically, is you have a football coach, say Jim Tressel, and he's the head coach, and then you have the line coach. And the line coach, is working in cooperation with the head coach. And that's the way I look at the county auditors working in conjunction with the commissioner. There are 88 county auditors, and it wouldn't be workable if the commissioner were required to give all information to all county auditors involving all audits and involving all administrative reviews.
Now, did
that's why the General Assembly doesn't require it.
Did the Greene County auditor attempt to participate in the assessment or reassessment
proceedings? We don't know, Your Honor, in this case. We don't keep records. The commissioner's personnel don't keep, detailed records of who contacts them when. And of course, that would be their burden in this case. There was a motion to dismiss. The appropriate procedure for the county auditor to have pursued, if the county auditor wanted to establish that they requested the information that was denied them, first of all, they would assert it. And we note at no point in their briefing do they assert that. In fact, when we say that if they had requested it, we would have given it to them, they're silent in their reply. So I think the logical inference is that either A, they did request it and they didn't choose to pursue it, or they didn't request any information or documentation concerning this case, and they just simply chose to file a notice of appeal. If you look at the timing of this, it's in November of 2009. Since that, on that same date, in another case pending before this court, Luana Delaney filed another notice of appeal from a personal property tax assessment. That was in the YSI. It's styled, of course, just as this one is, Delaney versus Levin, but the other appellee is the taxpayer, in that case, YSI. If you look at it, there have been, since that point, those two cases, she's filed nine more. Of those nine, two others are here at this court. So of the 11 total, four are here, seven are still at the commissioner's level. Every time the commissioner issues an assessment now, she's filing an appeal.
And this, as part of your earlier discussion, it appears, and indeed what was stated in the notice of appeal to the BTA, the objection is to having to pay out refunds under circumstances where the tax is no less. It appears to be that she has an objection to paying out refunds when the tax is no longer being imposed. Is that your sense of it?
That's certainly not well stated, but we can draw that inference possibly. And again, our point would be that she hasn't specified that. In our briefing, we said in order to conform with the requirements of the specification of error part of the notice of appeal statute, she would have had to say on what statutes. She asserts actually in her notice in her briefing that the monies would have to come out of the general revenue fund of the county, and that somehow that meant that the final determination of the commissioner here was unreasonable. And we say, first of all, what statutes say where it comes from? She didn't set forth the law, and she didn't say how that fact, even if true, that is, that the monies would have to come from the general revenue fund, how that would make the final determination unreasonable or unlawful. She would have had to say all that in her notice of appeal in order to properly specify error, in our view. But yeah, if we read everything together. We take, for example, John Nolfi's statements that are not in the record here. We add all that up together. We can logically infer that that may be what she was getting at. And that's where we're at right now. I would point out that, let's suppose we play the what-if game. What if she did ask and she did prove that the commissioner just stonewalled her? Well, then what would be the remedy? Would the remedy be to strike the statutory requirement that she must specify error? Well, the answer to that actually was answered by this court in a case that we cite in our brief. It's Cincinnati versus Hamilton County Budget Commission. In that case, that's exactly what happened with respect to a city who was required by the County Budget Commission appeal statute to the board to specify all the political subdivisions who were affected by the County Budget Commission's determination. And the city of Cincinnati asked the County Budget Commission, who are the other political subdivisions? And allegedly, at least, the Budget Commission refused to provide that information. And what this court said is the remedy isn't to strike the specification of a requirement that you specify all the political subdivisions. The remedy is that they have a mandamus action against the Budget Commission. If they have a clear legal right to get that information, that's the way to go.
Since we have no appellant, we have plenty of time.
If you have any further questions.
Why don't we hear from Mr. Anderson? How about 2 minutes for Mr. Anderson?
May it please the court. We are aligned with the state on this appeal, as appellees, as indicated in our brief of appellee. Has lots of interesting topics that it touches, none of which are before the court. The specificity requirement is pretty clear. We would urge the court to affirm the Board of Tax Appeals decision for the reasons stated in that opinion. By any standard of review, I think the notice of appeal fails. The constitutional law arguments are better left for another day and another case where they are properly presented. I would only point out that the county auditor a delay in dealing with these refund issues are just making matters worse for their FISC because there is interest running. And why the county auditor decided to do that in this particular case is obviously her opinion, but we don't know what it is today. The point that Mr. Hubbard made about whether the county is entitled to or is only with the discretion of the tax commission permitted to receive information in any proceeding. I can say I've been practicing law for well over 30 years and many times personal property tax cases, and any time the county auditor has asked to participate in administrative review process or even indeed audit, they participate. You know, the commissioner never says no. Thank you. Unless you have questions, then I'll just.
Well, thank you, Mr. Anderson. Thank you, Mr. Hubbard. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.